Hello and welcome to Out of the Frame, conversations about photography. I'm Pia Johnson, your host, and this podcast features conversations about photography, creativity, and the world we live in. I'll be talking to other photographers, curators, academics, and researchers about their work, artistic process, and how they feel about contemporary photography today. Out of the Frame acknowledges the people of the Woiwurrung and Boonwurrung language groups of the Eastern Kulin Nation, on whose unceded lands we record each episode from. We respectfully acknowledge ancestors and elders, past and present. It was, and always will be, Aboriginal land. This episode is a special episode for an exhibition called Refusal Futurity, currently on at Platform Arts in Geelong, that's running from the 10th of May until the 11th of July. Curated by Jodie Haynes, this exhibition features artists Eddie Abt, Hayley Miller-Baker, Amy Carkeek, Pia Johnson, Claire Ray, Jakali, Felicitas Romanus, and Jodie Haynes. It is an exhibition of contemporary women's self-portraiture, or humans who identify as women, and how they use lens-based media as a tool and mechanism to subvert the colonial, Western, and patriarchal gaze. Given the long history of stereotyping and othering embedded within photo media, with it being indexical and representational, honorific and repressive, gendered and imperial, Refusal Futurity explores how seven women use this problematic frame as a beautiful tool of subversion. Hi, Jodie. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really excited about having a special episode around the exhibition that you've curated that is currently on at Platform Arts in Geelong called Refusal Futurity. It's an honour to be part of the show and honour to be curated by you, and I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about how you came up with the idea and why you think it's really important now.
Well, thank you, Pia, for producing a special episode and for being an incredible artist as part of the show. I love all the artists' work that are in this show. So it kind of, I guess, backstepping, the opportunity came up to curate a show at Platform. And so at that particular point in time, I was really considering the power of the self-portrait and the power of females or humans who identify as females using that power of the self-portrait. So that sort of was the impetus for the theme. And then it sort of had a kind of looking at that, I guess the sort of the dual approach that we all take with self-portraiture, which has come into the idea of the title itself with Refusal Futurity. And it's sort of, the title captures that dual response and our dual approach to working and thinking through refusing the limitations of categorizations, but also simultaneously creating new possibilities through our artistic practices and through play and through centering of self, of knowledge, of country, of our emotion, of our feeling spaces, of all the things that are kind of, you know, go into this concept of being human, we place into our work in a very front and center way. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. That's a lot.
Well,
but I think you're right, though. I mean, I think it is a really nuanced, complex topic, and yeah. I think that is what the works really do entail in all of their different ways. You know, the artists seem to, like the works and the way you've curated them together in both downstairs and upstairs spaces, they speak to each other in those different ways of refusing boxes, but then also kind of playfully tagging the next person in to think about the same thing. I think about Amy's work really close to Claire's, but then kind of drawing across to my own. There's these really interesting synergies that, I guess, as you say, play, but also are kind of redefining how we see.
Yeah, completely. And it's also, I guess, in terms of those synergies and that tag in, it was very present in the way the work was laid out. I was very conscious of how each artist was positioned within the room in relationship to each other and how those kind of conversations from each person's work could stand strong on their own, but still kind of interconnect with each person as you look across the room or through the room or around the room, either backwards or forwards, like, or sideways.
So yeah, totally. Having Eddie's work in the middle, right? Like, it invites you to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, and also looking through Eddie's work as well, like you can look through the screens in between them and be seeing your work on the far wall and, you know, looking through to Hayley Miller Baker's work as well. And you just kind of get these kind of nice sort of tie-ins of, you know, visual elements, but also the deep kind of research and understanding that goes into the making of these works as well. So
I think this is a really good opportunity to move to the artist talks that were recorded for the opening of the exhibition on Wadawurrung Country. Let's hear from you, Jody, on the day, talking about the show, but also your work.
I'm Jody Haynes. I'm an artist, a very tired human, a curator, and live in Footscray, but originally from Tomagin Country on northwest coast of Lutruwita. And Tomagin Country is my grandmother's country as well, so I was quite lucky to grow up on the location that's, you know, connected to family and culture. But we've put together this quite beautiful little show of seven female artists who are using photo media as a form of pushing back and reclaiming space, and to also work through different methodologies, which each of the artists will potentially talk about, and just ways that we could create this refusal against the way the camera has been used, but also a way of creating a new kind of a new space, a new way of expressing our own selves without getting caught up in all that history and colonial and imperial and cultural stuff that's attached to it. So, yeah. So self-portraiture for me wasn't actually something that I voluntarily went into. It was kind of a forced thing that occurred doing that dreadful thing called a PhD. but I originally started my PhD working with other women creating collaborative portraits. And so once we were locked down, we were sort of, you know, couldn't work together, all of these things, I had to find a new direction. And so I just started playing, and I started playing in my studio and started creating all these different things. My favourite portrait is, I have a fuck COVID t-shirt. It's just like that one, just with the mask. But it's, yeah, it's, so that's kind of where it came from. It became a play. But through that play, I realised I was able to kind of start pushing back against some narratives that were fed through photography. So this work is half of a series called Flowing with the Future and Surviving Batman. And so the other three images were way too big to put in because they're 3 metres by 3 metres. So it's, yeah, a bit over the top. But those works were created along the Maribyrnong River, following the path that John Batman had followed when he first entered Kulin country. And so that was kind of an interesting play, because in Lutruwita, Batman had been a bounty hunter and had orchestrated the mass murders of many of my mob. So I kind of worked through that sort of process of, like, I'm still here, I'm still surviving, this kind of process of Batman's journey. The clothing I'm wearing was all lumen prints that I made on Tomagin country. So I was kind of sitting there thinking about how can I make these collaborative portraits with country, and then transferred those lumen prints onto fabrics and then hand sewed the clothing to try and keep this idea of having things wrapped around me all the time. So keep that sort of safety of being at home and being on country, and while I sort of navigate this ugly history. So these three here were created in my studio. I handmade a light gobo, which is the tree in the background, and sort of put that up on a gobo projector and flashed up a whole bunch of smoke in my studio, which my studio mates down the hall thought there was a fire. So that was quite fun. So this was kind of a psychological kind of motion through what does it feel like to sort of sit in that colonial context of being dislocated from country, trying to stay true to a position on Kulin country, and also fighting back against these kind of pushes that we have. So they're kind of my cloaks and my armour to sort of sit through that psychological push. So that's kind of about it. Yeah.
It would be great now, Jodie, if you don't mind maybe talking about some of the other artists in the show that have connection to your work and the way that that's been framed. Mm.
Yeah, I think a really obvious connection with my work is Chikali's work, especially in Gallery 2, looking at my Own Country series and Chikali's work up there as well. So with Chikali, she's very beautifully kind of embedded herself in country, in the image itself, and country is embedded in her. And I guess with my Own Country work up there, it's like me trying to find those ordinary performative acts of standing with and being with, not against, but also kind of, you know, in a sense, pushing against that concept of the white possessive and the ownership of spaces, but, you know, having that space, that country, that kind of concept of being the existence of my entire soul and DNA anyway. So, you know, Vanessa Watts talks about this concept of place thought, which extending that place extends to us, our kind of thinking and our being and our existence. But also from that, we are literally from the soil, the dirt, the water, everything that is place, that is us as well. So there's a really, that directly runs into what Chikali is working with in her works as well, and how, like, photographically she's like using layers to kind of bring that concept forward, and also show that, you know, she is country. Country is her. She is from the soil, from the dirt, from the air. So, yeah. So that's quite an obvious connection there, yeah.
I was able to speak to Chikali in the studio, so let's listen to that now. Thanks, Chikali, for joining me in the studio today. I'd love you to talk about the work that is in Refusal Futurity across two floors that you have got, really large photographs. Yeah, can you tell us a little bit how the work came about and how you created it?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Pia. So the works that are in the show were sort of my final grad show works in third year. I did a Bachelor of Arts in Photography at RMIT, and they really are an exploration of, I suppose, kind of self-representation, but also subverting, you know, the kind of colonial gaze, I suppose. So really thinking about how Aboriginal people have been historically portrayed in certain archives, and thinking about how I can kind of connect to country through this sort of layering methodology that I use. So layers of portraits with photographs that I've made on country. Yeah.
I guess if I delve a little bit into that, I mean, they are stunning photographs, and it is of the kind of silhouette of yourself, and then it kind of opens up, or kind of invites you in, probably is a better way of describing it, into the landscape and into that layered landscape. Were there a particular kind of different techniques that you were using to create the work, or was it and that you had in mind conceptually, or did it kind of organically kind of happen, I guess?
I think it happened fairly organically. I was sort of reflecting on, you know, my family's been kind of dislocated from country for three generations. So I grew up on Wadawurrung country, but, you know, my ancestral place is Pitta Pitta, which is like 3 hours south of Mount Isa. I was kind of considering how I can sort of submerse myself back into country through these kind of layering modes, and really toying with this idea of sort of like a sense of being withheld almost. I was thinking a lot about the sort of power in withholding knowledge, or the power of withholding sort of perception in a way. So it's, yeah, aesthetically it's me in the portraits, but as you say, they kind of like, it's a bit hard to tell who it is.
I think what's really fascinating is that if we didn't know that it was you in those photographs, they're still really powerful, because I think it's the idea of the human presence and how we find different ways of connecting to land. But I'm also fascinated, did you actually go, like, each image is quite different in terms of its landscape and colour and textures. Was that part of kind of an embodied process of going to place and going to country and kind of sitting with country?
Yeah, I suppose so. I think too, like the works that are sort of on the ground level at Platform, like they're more of kind of a diptych in the sense of they're sort of, because they look different, but there are kind of threads of sort of place and country that are woven through both of them. But the one upstairs, yeah, I think it was just sometimes with the images, I think that they kind of end up taking on a life of their own.
Yeah,
a little
cool.
Bit.
Yeah.
And things sort of become revealed through this kind of layering process, and it's really about seeing these like different interactions that take place between these different layers of the images, and I guess letting the images do a bit of the talking, and So I'm not so set on kind of like a visual aesthetic. I think sometimes the works just sort of reveal themselves, and then I'm like happy with them, you know?
That's really beautiful. It's like the image is telling you what it wants to say.
Yeah, and I think it's like interesting to sort of think about that, you know, through my PhD. I've been thinking a lot about the sort of agency of photographs and the life of an image after it's been made, I suppose, and where it ends up and where it goes. And I think that, you know, at the time of making the works that are in the show, that wasn't something I was thinking about, but it's all kind of connected and interesting to sort of reflect on those works now.
Like, what are the works now, and how does the works that are on show at Platform fit in your kind of larger of work?
Yeah, good question. I think so. Like, I made the works in third year, and then I did honours. And in honours, I sort of shifted a little bit and started thinking a lot more about different Western modes of mapping practice, and thinking about Google Earth and the sort of fusion of cartography and photography, and how that really shifts people's perceptions and understandings of place and of country. And so that was sort of my focus for honours. But then when I started my PhD, I sort of felt like I had these two threads. There were sort of the works that I'd been making based around Google Earth, and then the works that I was making about archives and kind of connecting to, you know, the three images that are in the show at Platform. But I sort of still reflecting on archival images of Aboriginal people. I found, you know, my great-grandmother Dolly had been documented within the Tyndale Genealogical Collection, which is held at the South Australian Museum. And Tyndale was an anthropologist that travelled through a series of Indigenous communities in the 30s and 40s, kind of documenting genealogy. But he also took a lot of images, and yeah, so it was like, I don't know, his research, I feel, is sort of from this kind of perception of the dying race a little bit.
In an ethnographic kind of way?
Yes, okay. Yeah, very
so I'm not
ethnographic.
Familiar with the work.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, so the portraits of my great-grandmother, I started working with those and using really similar kind of layering methods that I had in the sort of first iteration of the project, which was, I suppose, layering Dolly with photographs of country as a way of kind of bringing her home, because she was
beautiful.
Part of the Stolen Generation. Yeah. So, yeah, so I kind of, then it just was like all about archives and like considering Google Earth is actually an archive of country and of place, and how I can kind of connect to both country and ancestors through these two archives, recognizing that, you know, obviously photography and camera technologies have been used really as like weapons of research against, you know, Aboriginal folks. Like recognizing and acknowledging that context, but then thinking about how I can use the same tools in a relational way through this kind of like layering.
Wow. I'm so fascinated.
Yeah.
Partly because I love an archive, but the family, like, I'm not sure how familiar you are with my work, but like I was kind of obsessed for quite a while through my PhD around thinking about how we curate like family albums, how the family portrait and the family archive and that kind of vernacular way speaks to society just as it does to personal familial bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the grandmother figure, the maternal line is a really evocative one for me, partly because I have had really close relationships with one in particular, but I'm fortunate to still have another still alive. But there is, I think, a really fascinating way about how, as you say, that those tools or weapons sometimes in terms of photography are utilised in the archive, and the bias that we, if we're not attuned to it, we miss it. But if we actually look really carefully, we can see very clearly the bias that comes out from archives and family archives as well.
Mm, yeah, for sure. Definitely. I think too, like, again, coming back to sort of the agency of images, like I sort of grew up with one of Dolly's portraits that Tyndale had made in my family home. And, yeah, I sort of became interested in where it had come from. And that was sort of my, you know, beginning of sort of connecting with the Tyndale genealogical collection.
Do you think this is, I guess, moving back to the images that we can see in the platform show into this, you know, more recent work, do you think this kind of trajectory or line of investigation is something that you'll continue forward?
Yes, definitely. I think, you know, whilst these kind of like iterations of the project are sort of finished, I think it's probably like a lifelong work.
Yeah, wow.
Which is really lovely. Because I have, you know, I have maybe four or five family members who have been documented in this.
Oh, my goodness.
In this archive, yeah. So there's a lot to kind of unpack and explore, and it's, you know, actually just such a privilege and an honour to be working with those images and to have access to them. So I'm really hopeful that, you know, I can bring family along to kind of connect with those photographs as well.
Wow. Well, good luck and thank you for your time.
Thanks, Pia.
I think the connection to Hayley Miller Baker's work also in terms of the way she uses collage, so different types of layering, is fascinating, and that kind of performativity of her moving through place but in these quite stylized ways, you know, pushing against stereotypes that aren't necessarily of country, which is quite interesting, right? Like they're very colonial. Some, like, you know, I think of the eating sandwich. Like there's
the
something
white
about
bread sandwich.
Well, that's right. It's like, that's how it is. I mean, and all that it speaks to of growing up in the 80s, I remember it was just white bread, you know, and probably the 70s too. But that childlike play that I feel like is really imbued in those images as well, even though it's speaking to really quite dark kind of themes.
Mm. Well, I guess that's also, you know, the beauty of a lot of the works is the ability to use humour and playfulness to kind of talk about these incredibly dark themes. And like with Hayley's
work especially too.
Totally. Yeah, with Hayley's work, it's you know, it's kind of, it's so incredibly nuanced in the way that it's being derived and created and cut out. Like, I mean, just the artistic skill of doing that in it on its own is incredible. But the ideas behind it with the, you know, repositioning of histories and narratives and also kind of, you know, pushing back, like, what is that memory, what is that kind of existence? Did that even happen? Like, does this happen? Like, you know, just kind of reconfiguring through her work these really nuanced, amazing ideas. So that series has so much performativity, so much play, so much genuine pain. But then, you know, these kind of layers of history, layers of memory, layers of time, layers of narrative, layers of physical images, all of that just kind of keeps rolling through it in such a beautiful way. And that idea of layering was, you know, connected through with into Jakali's work and also into Eddie Abbe's work. So, and Eddie's beautiful videos, like, of the layering work within that. And it's so, so smart and so funny. Like, she uses
it is really funny
in such a great way to really push back and just, like, it's kind of like it has an unease about it as well, because you feel that humor, but then it's like, oh, I don't really want to be laughing at like this kind of It's a really deep tricky point, isn't it?
Like there's this experience in the viewer. And I think because it is multi-panel and you've got the sound and it's turning traditional video on its head because it's all vertical.
Yep.
And then these holes and then, there's just this, again, performative layering of meaning and message.
Yep.
But also too, as you say, it's uncomfortable. Because you're not sure how to respond as a viewer.
Which is perfect. It's just so smart. It's such a smart work that I'm really honoured that Eddie's said yes to put it in the show.
You know the title Refusal Futurity and you've got the slash in the middle, right? I feel like Eddie's on the slash.
Eddie is totally on the slash.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I think there's some clear lines that we all, like the different works sit in different camps and they bleed across. But Eddie's is like, it's right in the middle. It's just this fantastic way of being on that balancing point or the tipping point, you know. And I think having it in the middle of the exhibition, of Gallery One, and you can't ignore it. It's really amazing. And as you said, it kind of brings this amazing soundtrack too to the space.
Mm. Yeah, completely. It's the slash. We should talk about the slash.
You've talked about refusal and futurity, but the slash. Talk about that for me.
Yeah, so the slash, initially it was refusal and futurity and I kept working with that. And then I was listening to an audio book, Lauren Elkin's Art Monsters.
Oh, my God, I love that book. It's well-loved book. Yeah. Yes.
It was one of those aha moments when I was listening to it, just going, the sound of the slash, the ripping of the slash, the cutting, tearing apart, but also creating firm division. But all these, there was just so much within their description of that slash that I was like,
oh. I totally forgot about that. Now that you've said it, I'm like, there's like a whole number of pages to the slash. Or maybe even a chapter. It's amazing.
And the audio book is fantastic because it does the sound of the slash. Oh, wow. And so I just had this going through my brain.
Is it her reading the audio book or is it somebody else?
That is a very good question. I have forgotten.
I must look into it.
I think it was Lauren Elkin reading. If I'm incorrect, then I'll.
Yeah, we'll have to find out. Yep. But yes. Oh, wow. I should actually do that because, it's been a little while since I read it.
Mm. It's really great. So that kind of really, the slash itself really tied things together, I think, in terms of, we've got these great ideas of refusal and futurity, but the slash was that visual divide, but also the thinking mechanism that they're kind of, you're looking on either side of a mirror, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I was just thinking then too, also that thing of, as you say, the either side, the either or, but either and as well. Yep. Like it is really, and I guess it's more symbolic and nebulous simultaneously by being a slash rather than having the and or the or the with. Having the slash feels interestingly kind of more like it's up to you. You work it out. Like I'm not doing the work for you here. You work it out. And I kind of like that because refusal and futurity is inclusive. It's like it's feel good.
Yeah.
It's going, come along for the journey, where this is sort of a little bit more static in a way. And I think that viscerality of the sound, the slash, is really interesting too because I think all the works do have a visceral nature to them.
Oh, they absolutely do.
I think there's skin in the game, They're vulnerable. There's a kind of defiance in them. But also they're all taking up space. And, I think that's the amazing thing about women and female identifying artists now, we, and through self-portraiture, and we've discussed this before, you know, there is a stance and a territory that we can take up now, and we have the voice for it in a way that I think we didn't always, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. But I also love the fact that we're giving ourselves agency to do this in a very directed way. Like, we're conscious of every moment that we're putting into those images. So it's not just about representation or kind of returning a gaze or taking up a space. It's actually where consciously considering exactly what sort of representation we want to put out there and how much space we want to take up and what it is we're kind of, you know, physically performing. So it's such a conscious act every step of the way. Yeah.
We're going to listen to a couple more artist talks, one by myself and the other by Amy Karkeek, and then finish off the episode with an interview in the studio with Claire Ray.
Sophia, do you want to give us a little bit of background about this work here? But firstly, introduce yourself, obviously.
Yeah. I'll do a little introduction, but I won't take too much time. So as Jodie said, I'm Pia Johnson. I'm a artist, photographer, curator and lecturer. I actually live on Jajawarung country in Woodend, so I just want to pay my respects or extend my respects to the traditional owners of that land as well as the lands that we're meeting on today. This work also was made on Jara country in Castlemaine. I was actually on a residency for making a completely different work than what is on the wall around blood and lineage and how, as someone of mixed cultural descent, we understand and think through our bloodlines. And I was not having a great time and gave myself a day off during the residency and thought, I'm just going to muck around and experiment and play. And I tend to move back to doing this kind of self-portraiture work where I put myself in the frame as a kind of safe place to play when I'm finding other things aren't working very well or I'm stuck. And it's a way of, I guess, me breaking a cycle a little bit, getting out of my head, getting back into my body, thinking about sight and place and how we embody space and what we feel in terms of different spaces, how we belong. The other really lovely thing about this particular site is it was a decommissioned hospital. And what was in this kind of bowels of the hospital were records and files and the people that mainly kind of worked in this particular area of the hospital were women. So again, it felt really ripe to think about a women's, you know, women's bodies in this kind of jail-like kind of looking really dense space. And utilise the fluoro, which is, you can kind of see here, but more specifically in this particular image, and how that could shape ourselves and kind of lay bare what is going on. The other really interesting thing about this particular, I guess, series is that I was trying to look at different female artists at the same time or representations of women. So you'll see a number of the images reference other pieces of artwork and other artists, probably most famously Francesca Woodman at the end there and her polka dot series that was created in Rome. But also this one here looks at one of my favourite artists, Dorothea Tanning, who her kind of most famous artwork is, I love the sound that we've got here. Feels very soothing, actually. Her famous work is called Birthday. And part of the reason why I thought I would kind of recreate part of that gaze and stance was because I was also, it was really close to my birthday as well. So I think trying to think about these kind of big moments, but also, again, within space is sort of what is here. And I was just sharing with Amy before that the work was originally made for me. So I had never planned to show it. It was really personal work, and I guess it was, again, as I said, was trying to break a circuit, trying to get myself out of my head. And I didn't actually exhibit it until 2022 with another series of work at Bundoora Homestead, which was also looking at space and kind of domestic spaces. So it's really lovely to have the opportunity to show it again in this amazing show. So thank you, Jodie.
Hi, I'm Amy. I'm from Brisbane, originally Victorian, but now I call myself a Queenslander through and through. Yeah, I guess for me, this is not the kind of work I ever make at all. I've never made a self-portrait. And over the past few years, I've been working a lot with found imagery and objects and probably imagery from the internet, and moving more into found objects which have been discarded and undervalued and not cared for. And I undertook this work as part of a three-month residency I did in Portugal, in Lisbon. And I was there to research female practitioners in between the dictatorship, so 63 to 74, I think. I'm having a bit of a memory blank there. And Helena Almeida is probably one of the most famous artists out of Portugal. And to get to see her work amongst a whole plethora of other female artists, which I've never heard of or seen their work, was quite transformative. And I think similar to Pia, and I'm sure Claire, to have this sort of dedicated space and time in a residency is absolutely transformative. And this work for me came quite intuitively, and everything that Claire and Pia have said is absolutely resonating with me in how you just start responding to something and making it and moving with this process, which you don't necessarily plan at all. And often the things you plan, as Pia said, you keep pushing and they don't happen. So yeah, seeing Helena's photographic works was really, yeah, amazing for me. And she was trained as a painter, and she found painting wasn't adequate enough for her. She wanted to get off the canvas, and she's made these amazing 3D sort of sculptural paintings. But then she started using photography as a way to expand painting, and that is, anyone who's a photographer knows, it doesn't really work like that. It's quite the opposite way. So she's really fascinating. But what I found, what I took away from, one of the many things I took away, but looking at all these female artists' work, they all use the body under dictatorship. So obviously they were in a privileged position to be working as artists, that many female practitioners of the time didn't have that privilege. And from speaking to other academics who research these women and have been researching these artists for a long time, they would never call themselves feminists because it was too dangerous to do so. And there was a fear that they would lose their funding or exhibitions and gallery support. And yeah, I guess I just was really thinking about the pressure and the force of the body and being a woman, and also the pressure of the studio space to create and make. And this was a studio I was fortunate enough to have for 3 months. And so, yeah, I bought a brand new camera, like a brand new secondhand camera in Europe, and I was very excited to have that. And I actually didn't take any photos until the very end of my residency. I was purely working with found objects through chance encounters at a flea market, which was interesting and quite confrontational from a colonial perspective as well. And so, yeah, I guess I just sort of, you can see I put this on a chair in my studio, so the chair's in there, so I had no way of sort of knowing what I was doing in a way. And I'd set up my little set, so I had little tape marks on the floor. I just sort of guessed the focus based on distance, and just sort of played in what was essentially a space shorter than this wall, and just continued to kind of push against both the space, the body, but also the idea, I guess, of the stage or the frame that the camera allows, and also the sort of oppositionary states, I guess, where the camera can also be the thing that has, you know, I guess, as Jodie's spoken to, you know, allowed the gaze, the male gaze upon the female body and all those sorts of things. So just sort of, yeah, pushing and pulling against both photography, the artist's studio and space and the pressure within that, but then also obviously the expectations upon women and the body as well, for a body that's never been photographed like this at all. And like Pia, I never thought I would show these. These were really just done for me. And I was just playing in the dark room with them and happened to send one to Jodie to see what she thought. And here we are. So thank you for including me. I'm very honoured. And thank you for the lovely essay too, Kelly. That was really beautiful.
Yeah, fantastic essay. Amy also hand printed all of these in the dark room. So her hand has been part of the entire process of pushing against this wall that she's never made it through, to printing the works, to hand drawing on top. So there's, yeah, a lot of embodied process within that.
Thanks so much, Claire, for joining me
My pleasure.
The podcast. I'm going to first ask you about the work for Refusal Futurity that Jodie Haynes has curated both of us into, as a way of talking about kind of the ideas and themes for you that are embedded in the works in the show.
Mm-hmm. So I've got two sort of large format photographs installed in the exhibition. They have both been made, and I've also got a video work that's displayed in a portrait screen that's leaning up against the wall. And all three of those works were made inside an art collection storage facility that belongs to the University of Melbourne. And the work came out of a... it's come from my research that I've been undertaking for a number of years through my PhD into archives, collections of photography. It sort of broadly started as sort of looking at the way that particular women photographers, my kind of case study artists, were represented in national collections in Australia. But also kind of encapsulated in that was thinking about the particular sites and locations where photography is held and these, you know, photographs by women artists. And so because of my history as a person who makes quite kind of site responsive work or makes photographs in very particular locations, I knew that I wanted to take photographs in these archive spaces. And so it kind of became this kind of two-pronged project where I was looking, sort of trying to see like who was in the collections, who wasn't in the collections, or kind of when their work was collected, or, you know, how many times they were represented, kind of doing this survey for myself, and then going into these spaces and actually kind of physically interrogating them with my body. And with the University of Melbourne collection facility, I kind of built up, I sort of proposed a, like, I was framing it as like a residency in their collection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I proposed that to them. And luckily, you know, they were really open-minded and they have a really great collections manager who facilitates student engagement with the collections. And she was just wonderful and kind of, really was on board from the start in terms of what I was thinking about doing. Because I've made work like this before in different places, there's often a lot of kind of OH&S things to worry about.
Logistical kind of things as well.
Yeah. And just like kind of risk management. People, you know, if any of the listeners have seen the photographs, I end up doing a lot of climbing on things and sort of, you know,
crawling things
around, weird. And there's often, just concerns for the, you know, things in the facilities, but also concerns for my own physical safety.
Coming from someone who also uses her body in spaces, and for me it's very much around a kind of experiential, phenomenological kind of way of thinking about space and deep history and archive and similar kind of things to you, I think. But how do you feel like when you're making images and you know, either of the two images that are displayed in the exhibition, you know, there's a sense of play but composure as well as very much like it's where it's you, you know. Do you feel like
your own personal history is embedded in those images?
Yeah.
Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, I think when I used to make photographs, I was really conscious of, you know, not kind of representing a sort of personal subjective position, even though it is always a personal subjective position because it's, you know, it's me and I'm doing that as a really sort of active choice using myself. But I was, you know, I guess making work images and photographs that I felt spoke to a kind of broader or sort of broader issues that women face in regards to representation and the sort of acceptable, behaviours and gestures that we are permitted to enact in public. And, you know, and I was trying to sort of subvert that and present this kind of alternative way of like relating to the body in public space and private space. And then, I mean, and I sort of swing back and forth a bit too because it is, I'm writing about this at the moment in my PhD, about this kind of tension between self-portraiture and self-imaging, you know, because they're not the same thing. And I think...
Do you want to say how they're not the same thing?
Well, you know, self-portraiture is very subjective. It is, you know, presenting a portrait of a person at a moment in time and trying to kind of express something of that person. Or of yourself, if you're taking it of yourself. And, you know, I guess in most of my work, that's not my concern. I'm not trying to sort of say, oh, this is my, you know, this is how I'm feeling this morning or, you know,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, utilizing myself as the performer to enact something. And often I've written about this a lot, about this kind of idea of this iterative act. And the works are called Untitled Actions. And that's this kind of long-running series I've been doing where I, you know, it's kind of just a name for everything I've made.
Yeah.
You know, I'm performing these actions in particular places to sort of highlight the specificity of the action or the gesture or whatever it is happening, rather than saying, you know, I've got something to say about myself as Claire Ray, you know, in the world. But of course, like, you know, nothing is absolute and things always come out in the work. And in one of the pictures in the exhibition, I'm holding this truck blanket and Kelly wrote about it in the essay and I'm sort of holding it like a baby and doing this back bend. And I was thinking a lot, and at the time I was researching this work by Anne Ferrin. And she photographed her daughter in Paris in the 80s when she did a residency there. And she was looking at those Jean-Michel Charcot photographs of women performing hysteria. And so she asked her daughter and some other actors to sort of recreate these like out of control convulsions. And I was thinking about those images, which they have in their collection, so I'd gone to look at them. And,
yeah, wow.
And then the picture that I took is like immediately adjacent to one of her works on the racks. And she has this other body of work called Box of Birds where she asked a performer to hold up these felted woolen blankets and she works with these dancers and performers to kind of make make images and performance photographs together. So I was thinking a lot about Anne Ferrin, and her, and I've spoken to her a bit too. And you know, a lot of her work has come from, I guess, a kind of thinking around. I mean, maternity is like one way of saying it, but kind of maternal relations, and so, you know, and as a mother of two kids, I kind of everything is porous in life and nothing is absolute. And so, I was thinking about Anne's work with the blankets and I knew immediately when I saw those truck blankets I wanted to work with them because they're a bit sort of satiny. They have a little bit of a theatrical kind of feeling to them, but they're very utilitarian. They have a purpose. They're made for a purpose to protect things. So that was interesting too.
And it just kind of immediately, the first thing I thought of was like, imagine if I wrapped it up like a baby and held it like a baby, yeah. but you could never see the baby. And
and there's also a labor aspect, I feel.
Yeah.
Is in that, you know, the physicality of of caring, but also of how that translates into truck blankets and the, you know, like, and they're holding work and they're holding things. I think what's really lovely about that, lovely maybe not the right word, but like what's really compelling about that image is that actually it translates beyond the maternal as well. You know, just the weight of being human, the weight of being female. And I think for me, while I see the maternal and understand it as a really interesting through line for you, even thinking back to that really early work at Sutton, you know, there's just so much that being in the female body and being a mother enables you to use your body and think about it that way. But also when it becomes a object, like in the truck blanket, it also translates to so much more, I think, in terms of how we just live life. Like the heaviness of that.
You know? The weight, I guess.
And being framed, like you're actually kind of double framed as well in that particular image. It's
Framed by the racks.
So
I made that one first, and then the second one is on, I'm lying on this scissor lift trolley.
I love that.
And I saw that trolley and I kind of immediately thought I want to do something with that. And they've got these beautiful little pillows that are made to put precious objects onto, or like rare books that you can't, you know, have to support the spine. And so they had heaps of these pillows just piled up. So I grabbed a couple of those, and it just, you know, I'd made other works in there in the space on these steel trolleys and tables. And so it already kind of was already speaking to me about, you know, hospitals and and sort of those sorts of sterile spaces. And so I just kind of thought, I'm going to lie down on this scissor lift trolley. And I was thinking about that postpartum moment when, you know, you've had the baby, you've kind of like, it's such a huge experience, childbirth, and, you know, many things can happen. And I remember both times after I gave birth, there was this really clear moment of kind of, you know, reckoning with what just happened.
Wow.
And, you know, the first time it was very, there was a lot of exhilaration because you have this big adrenaline rush after the birth, and, or I did at least. And, you know, it was a kind of amazing moment. And then the second time was really different because I had a massive hemorrhage. And so it was a kind of really radically different experience to what I was expecting. And so I just kind of, you know, that image for me really, I was trying to kind of, I don't know, encapsulate something. And so it was, it is very reflective on my own experience. But I think, you know, hopefully other people can connect to it too. And I'm just trying to, I guess, represent a, a bodily sensorial experience in that.
I mean, I think it's really interesting, and thank you for sharing, you know, the personal in that, because I think that enables, again, a kind of literal labour, but also how we depict those kind of moments of reckoning, of repose, of,
they're,
you know,
not depicted.
Well, they're not, and this is it. Right. And I would imagine too, you go into these collections and you look at the images that have been collected of women, women artists, and they're not always those ones that maybe are more vulnerable or more revealing. It's kind of performative or stoic, or you know, they different
the adoration
kind of
motherhood, you know. There's a lot of great writing about that.
I mean, I think in terms of where this work has come in, kind of the trajectory of your work to date, can you talk a little bit about how
You know, like I feel like you do work in series a lot of the time, but there's a common language, you know, the Claire Ray, not just physically being depicted, but also the way you use your body in space and as you say, kind of pushing against normal socialized stereotype ways of looking at women. So how I get this as part of a PhD, which is always an intense period of working and analyzing your work, but also how do you feel this sits in reference to like some of either that really early work or through other collections? I know you worked at RMIT. Like, how do you see that sort of fitting in with your broader?
It's definitely artwork? A kind of development and extension on from those earlier projects. 10 years ago, a bit more, I did a series of photographs at NGV, and I was really lucky to have access to the kind of back of house spaces and the photography collection storerooms there. And that really sparked within me this kind of great curiosity about what these cultural repositories hold and the way that people can access them or not, and the way that we're meant to behave in them, and just kind of all these questions sort of immediately came up. So I did a residency looking at this archive of photographs by Claude Cahoon and Marcel Moore in Jersey. And I was, again, immediately really struck by the kind of questions around behaviour and access and agency that people have in those very particular spaces. And I made a sort of series of photographs in response, and a couple of them I situated in the archive where the Cahoon photographs are held. And for me, that was really important to have. Even though you can't sort of visibly see the photographs in the work, I knew that my body was in proximity to those photographs, and that was a really powerful thing for me to experience, and I was trying to sort of convey that in the image and then a few others. But they're also, anyway, that's a bit of a side story, but archive spaces are really weird. They're very managed. They're very denatured. You know, because they kind of have to be, they've got to be a particular air temperature, and, you know, they're very dry.
They are very dry, yes.
And so kind of bringing in a living, breathing body into these spaces to sort of like unsettle them in a way is something that I'm interested in. And so then, you know, I came to the PhD and was really sort of thinking a lot about those concerns. Also thinking a lot more broadly about architecture, and I did a whole lot of early research about just sort of looking at what this concept of feminist architecture might be. So, you know, spaces that are built with not so much with women's bodies in mind, but with a kind of feminist sensibility about, you know, in some cases it's about kind of engaging more senses than just a kind of ocular, you know, sensorial experience. So thinking about sound and, you know, smell and other things, thinking about the way that bodies move in space. I mean, even just kind of at its most basic, thinking about, you know, access requirements that different people might need.
Totally.
So this body of work has really stemmed from like the last, you know, 10 or 15 years of practice. It's sort of obvious to say. But
no,
it's
I think
exciting.
It's clear to see those threads through, you know, I think.
That's good.
Yeah, I'm really fascinated in seeing where next for you also. I mean,
I can't think about it, totally.
But, you know, I think there is these, I think as artists, and I really do think there's something very special about using your own body in your images because we age and we move differently and we feel differently, even if, as you say, whether it is a self-portrait or a self-image or how you're using your iteration in each image and what it means. I think it's really, like, it's an amazing privilege, but also as the viewers of that work, it's wonderful to kind of track it.
Okay.
And maybe I'm specifically, like, I'm really invested in photographic self-portraiture.
but also how we do it differently, because it is, in the end, our personal bodies in space and in time.
Yeah.
And I find that as a really authentic, beautiful way of translating the world.
Yeah.
So it's really nice. Lovely to see. No, but for me, you know, like it is really lovely to see how the threads have moved and maybe matured and consolidated, but also, as you say, challenge like other aspects. I think it's really generative. The fact that you're taking the architecture or an archive or a different locale.
Yeah.
And how that comes out in the work.
Yeah. The video has been a real revelation, and I've always made videos in my work and often with particular series. I've done a lot of stop motion animations with photographic stills. But then for this work, I just knew I didn't want to make a stop motion. I just wanted to record something that was really immediate.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, and I've made a whole lot of other videos in different spaces, and it's kind of, it's been so liberating.
Oh, cool. That's great.
Yeah. So I think, I might make more videos in the future.
Amazing.
That's in my future. But, yeah, it's interesting to think about the kind of moving and still images working together or separately.
Yeah, and I think it works really well in the current space and being situated not on a wall, like being leaning, I think is also a really dynamic way of engaging the moving image, because that's not how we would normally experience it.
So. Yeah, there's a very kind of bodily relation to it, I think, which is great.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Pia.
Out of the Frame is supported by RMIT University Press Play Studio, is produced by Pia Johnson, music by Steph O'Hara, and graphic design by Brent Leadovitz.